And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And this week, we continue recounting the adventure that my friend Kyle and I had over in the Czech Republic. This was recorded back in January. And after this excerpt, we'll be back with an update as to just what we're doing today, at least what we think we're doing today. Stay tuned. Prague, the Czech Republic. Not really sure why they get to have republic in their name. You know, I mean, there's so many countries that are republics, and you always have to say the Czech Republic. You know, I think people in Europe say Czech. Some people might say Czechia, although that sounds too much like Chechnya.
Yeah,
which can lead to all kinds of misunderstandings.
Yeah.
But the point is, we wanted to go to Prague, a really cool city. I've been to a couple of times, and
completely different language and completely different money system.
Yeah, they're in the EU, but they don't use the euro.
They
use the Czech kroner.
That was nice to me. I had no idea that their money was the same, yet they were part of the EU. That was totally totally foreign to me. I had no idea about that.
I wasn't sure about that, and apparently it was. It hasn't been agreed to yet by the Czech people, so they have to sort of work that out, and maybe they'll have the euro in the next year or two.
Oh, so it's in the works, so to speak. Okay,
so,
cool.
Yeah,
okay.
Pretty much.
Look out for that.
So we wound up in Prague.
Yeah.
And just sort of wandered around, tried to find out where we were staying, and it wasn't so bad. We figured it out after a while. Of course, we had to ride the metro. We had to ride all three different metros to get to where we were going. Of course, we probably didn't have to do that, but that's just sort of the way that that I routed it. I remember the last time I was in Prague, I ran into this problem where I was at the station and I didn't have their money, and there was no way to get their money in order to get a metro ticket.
This was helpful because before we actually got to Prague, mm-hmm. we changed a little money, didn't we?
Yeah, we changed money in Germany. We got some kroners so that we were ready for this.
You anticipated might need some cash.
I thought this might happen again, and having the cash definitely helped. We went to a machine. We were able to actually buy the appropriate metro ticket so we could...
Two short ride tickets, enough to get us to where we're staying.
A short ride ticket being four or five stops, no more than that, and you only have 30 minutes to use it, but it's less than say, a full fare ticket.
And you get this, you know, credit card size ticket that is, you know, fluorescent, and it's got, you know, watermarks and holograms. I mean, it's very official. You validate it similar to the way you validate it in Germany, and
validate,
you're
basically,
on your way.
You stick it in a machine, the machine stamps it, time stamps it, and that's your proof that you paid for a ticket. In case you get asked, because lots of times in Germany and many other countries, there's no real confirmation. You basically have a ticket. You're supposed to have a ticket, but you walk onto the train. There are no barricades. You just are on and being treated like an adult. And if anybody asks you, if somebody working for the Mass Transit Authority asks you and you don't have it, well, you get fined on the spot, as you should. Same thing in Czech Republic, so we had to figure out the system and know it well. So we found where we were staying, and kind of like a little shell shock, we just had a 5-hour train ride.
Yes, and it was quite long.
In a strange country.
Beautiful, though. It was great that we had it during the day. We got to see quite a bit of the landscape mm-hmm. on the way into Czech Republic. But once we had gotten to where we were, we needed to find something authentic, something to really ground us in that different culture. We'd been in Germany quite a bit, and it was really about where could we celebrate and have a great, authentic Czech meal.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be something. You know? We hopped on the internet because we had Wi-Fi in our room, and basically found a bunch of places, including one that was two doors down from where we were staying.
Yeah, funny how it ended up being. Wasn't very funny, was it?
Well, it was two doors down. I mean, you know.
But didn't we walk like ten blocks to find it?
We did walk all over the place.
Okay, I'll own that. That was my directions. I've been quite a good navigator, though, on this trip.
You haven't. I have no sense of direction. You have a very good sense of direction. But we walked around Prague for quite a bit, exploring and looking for various things. And
it was fun. It was
wound up right back where we started.
We did. It was right next door.
Two doors down was this massive place. Where all these people were crowded in, and of course I didn't think we'd ever get into this place, and so we walk up to the door and we say, can we get a table for two, and they brought us right in. Of course, we had to go through, I think, three different rooms to get to our table.
Yes, he walked us through the main hall to the second hall, and then put us at a bench table with four other, you know, parties, you know, enjoying their meal. And
oh, they were doing more than enjoying their meal.
Oh, okay,
everybody
right. was dancing.
There was singing. There was dance. People were holding mugs of beer up in the air.
Tuba, accordion, I mean, it tradition. Was, oh, it was amazing.
This was unbelievable. We just walked into this place, and all of a sudden, we're in the middle of a party.
A huge party.
It was the biggest party I've ever seen. And supposedly, this place has something like 1,200 seats.
1,200, yeah.
So, we were looking for authentic. We got authentic right in our face.
Definitely got authentic.
Absolutely. They started bringing, they just bring you beer. They assume that's what you're there
yeah,
for.
Yeah, but we're no sooner did we, you know, run our fingers. Okay, I think, yeah, this beer looks good. Yeah, I think I'll try that one. When he comes around, here it comes. Boom, beer's right in your, right on the table. They,
right
it's like
table.
They read our minds.
Yeah.
It was uncanny.
You can't not want beer if you're in this place. And then, of course, we had to order from the menu. Now, there are things that they have in the Czech Republic that are staples, and pig knuckles is one of them, apparently. And other things roasted in well, what else but beer, all day long is something else.
Yes, they have lots of pork meals, lots of gravy, a lot of cabbage, a lot of cabbage and sort of casserole things, and of course brats and like au gratin potato type things.
Yeah.
It was really, really interesting to get that hearty Czech meal with the ambiance of this very traditional place. Just everyone singing,
and people just get to know each other. We were talking to the people across from us, who are a couple from Philadelphia. The people next to us, who seemed to be from somewhere in the eastern part of Russia, they were Asian, but they were speaking Russian.
Absolutely. Yes.
Other people on the next table, they were Italian.
Yes.
Everybody became best of friends within the matter of maybe a half an hour or so, toasting each other
yeah.
and talking about various things. And there's no better way of just, I guess, communing with the human race.
There were no barriers, no you know, quiet conversation. Everybody sort of broke the ice as soon as we sat down. It was, hey, you're part of the family. You're at our table.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the service there was brisk. We got everything we ordered, and everything was just there for us, so that you could really soak up the environment and have that fun with everyone else. You know,
yeah.
It didn't take much time at all before we were, you know, cheering the couple that stands up to dance together, and you know, helping people take pictures with the accordion player. You know, oh, all of a sudden we're the, you know, photographer for their trip and all of that. It was just really, really fun.
Yeah, so. I think we got really lucky just finding a place like that so close to where we were staying. But there are a number of places like that in Prague where you have all the traditional type of fare and celebration and things like that. And I was surprised at how easily we fell into that. It was
yeah.
it was very, very cool.
Quite fun.
And we walked around
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, we walked around afterwards the next day or two, and just we saw the Prague Castle. We went there in the evening.
Yes, we did.
And that is a really cool time to go there. You climb up this What would you call it? Is it a mountain? Is it a hill?
We had been looking for it, and we had seen it off in the distance. We weren't sure because of
you'd
where
you'd think you'd be able to find the Prague Castle. It's the biggest thing in the city, but
right.
I couldn't find it. It was there somewhere, but we took trams all over the place. We got a day
pass.
We
had to cross the river and get to that part of town, and then you get the sense, okay, it's up on that hill.
Wait, do you want to talk about how hard it was to get the day pass for the transit? Because
oh, you're right.
Yeah, we tried to do that, and that was insane. Basically,
we mentioned this. Yeah, you
a day pass.
Yeah, we couldn't get cash.
Right, you have to pay for the day pass, obviously. And we went down to the metro and wanted to pay for the day pass. The machine only took
coins.
Didn't take bills. Didn't take credit cards. We didn't have that many coins.
And we couldn't get cash exchanged at the restaurant, as the booth attendant had told us.
Yeah, there's a guy in the booth.
By the office phone and said,
go to the restaurant. You know, I can't give you change. I don't know what his purpose was, but basically we had to go upstairs, ask at a restaurant who had no intention of giving us anything. In fact, we bought a beer at this place.
Yeah, we bought half a liter of beer
thinking we'd
get change. It did kind of backfired, but it was a start.
It was a start. Then you went to the bathroom and paid to go to the bathroom.
Oh, my God. That was a dive. you know, there was a police officer in the bathroom that spoke English, and an old woman in a little booth that kept saying, five kroner to use the restroom. I had to use the restroom. I was in, you know, I trying to hand her a hundred kroner bill, and she just blew up. Oh, come, are you kidding? What do you think I'm crazy? No, she said five kroner. And so I eventually paid to use the restroom.
So we wound up with less change.
Less change. Yeah, we lost at that point. It was terrible. But we managed to walk up the block.
Well, no. We should be honest about
this.
Okay,
right.
We had to walk into the metro system, meaning that we were evading the fare. Because the only way to get to the other side easily was to cut through the entire system.
Yeah, it was really cold outside.
It was very cold.
And we did not technically get on a train. We simply used the escalator system and the pathway to the other escalator.
But as soon as you pass by the entrance to the station, you are, in fact, committing fare evasion if you don't have a ticket. We wanted a ticket. We had money. We were trying to pay for the ticket, but there was no way to buy a ticket. Nobody would give us change.
Oh, were we trying.
So we eventually walked through the entire station, exited on the other side, and finally found a bar that would give us change, or they were quite pleasant about it, in fact. Went back, bought our damn ticket, and started riding around. Got on a tram, of course, went the wrong way again, like we usually do.
The 22, yes. We found out how far south the 22 goes.
It was pretty far south.
It was very south.
Yeah, and then we realized we had to go the other way to get to the castle.
That's right, yes. You take the other direction on the 22. That gets you across the river, and on that side of town, you can actually ride very close to the bank of this hill where the castle is. We got off the tram. We were able to sort of walk around. At this point, it was getting on to early evening, a little bit dark, but it was beautiful the way this entire castle was lit up from below. And
the cobblestone streets and just the narrow roads and just the sense of history everywhere you went. People simply going about their business, going from one place to another, but realizing that this place existed for many hundreds of years, just like this.
And could you believe how quiet it got? You'd turn one corner, and it was just silence. Mm-hmm. You're in this very tiny, rustic little street in a back alley, and it felt good. It felt warm, like you're really exploring it.
And it was really cold, too.
It was very cold. But warm and just glowing with that rich culture that's unique, you know, cool old buildings. So we eventually made our way around and crossed through a small park and then found this long stairwell that leads up to the castle. And there were quite a few tourists, a lot of people exiting this and going up this stairwell. So we figured, okay, this must be it. This is the entrance to the castle. We got to go up this stairwell. And that's what we ended up doing. And so we began our way up and saw this incredible cathedral lit up and just glowing at the center of this castle entrance. And it was sort of the spectacle, the gem of the castle itself, which you got the sense it was much bigger. That this compound was extending a long way across the top of this hill. But it was really beautiful to look at this old cathedral and just walk around the whole thing and explore a little bit and try to figure out why they have two clock dials.
Yeah, two clock dials. That was weird.
Yes, but we eventually figured it out. One is a minute hand, one is for the hour. And
they have different clocks for the minute and different clocks for the hour.
That's right. So it was amazing.
Glad they figured out how to combine those two, because it would have been a pain in the ass to walk around with two watches all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So we did that, and it was amazing. Went back the next. Oh, are we out of? We need more wine.
I think we are.
Okay,
yeah,
hold on. Right. Here we go. Is that enough?
A little more.
Yeah. All right.
That's fine. Yeah, probably
good. Okay, and I'll have some myself. I'll do a little more. Right up to the top there. Yeah. Boy, that is, it's always sad when the bottle ends.
It's really quite a...
So, yeah, where were we? We were in Prague.
Yes.
We wanted to leave Prague at some point.
But wait.
We have
cheers.
To get back. Cheers.
There you go.
So we were figuring we wanted to get to back to Germany because, it's one step closer to Frankfurt, our final destination. But also, we wanted to visit the people at the Club Mate plant where they make the the energy drink that hackers are simply going crazy over, and we figured it would be nice to sort of drop in on them. We decided to buy a train ticket to Nuremberg, and then eventually from there to the small town where the brewery actually existed. And I went on the website of Deutsche Bahn, the German rail, to buy the train ticket, and found out that the train ticket actually was a bus. A bus ticket.
I can't believe that, but it is.
The bus was faster.
The Deutsche Bahn bus, no less.
Yeah, Deutsche Bahn bus.
Yeah,
DB bus. But it's faster than a train, so okay, whatever.
I could not believe that. I couldn't believe it was faster, but there you go.
And I figured, you know, that buying the ticket online, as always, would be simpler, and you could simply...
Which I think is a good point. You raise a good point. Explaining to someone that at a Czech train station that you need a German bus... that can get complicated in translation.
You don't want to go there.
As
soon as I saw a German bus at the Czech main train station, I realized, you know, let alone finding the bus, but finding the person to sell you the ticket for that bus. I've been to Poland, all right, and I've tried to do that in Warsaw, and you need to plan a day for that.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get a damn ticket, and it was very simple. On the German rail line, you simply click a few things, enter your credit card information, bingo, you have a PDF, which is your ticket. However, when you get that PDF, that's when they tell you, this PDF is not valid, you need to actually print it out in order for anybody to accept it. So, you know, I didn't think that was a big deal at that point either. We'd go downstairs to the hotel reception, have them print it out.
We prepared for this.
Yeah.
You know, we made a copy and put a copy on a jump drive, and you had some emails prepared. Just in case, so we make sure that the people in the lobby, no matter what way they needed, we would be able to accommodate them so that they could help us get this ticket printed.
No problem.
But,
you know, it was a problem.
Oh, yeah. So we had about 40 minutes at this point, and we,
I think we had about an hour.
About an hour,
when
okay.
we started
in
the
process. Lobby, yes. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. We had an hour in the lobby. You're absolutely right. So we... mosey down there and ask them in our best English to...
Our best English?
Our clearest, most succinct, and just delicately, could you please print this document? And you were, you know, emailing them. I don't know exactly how that went.
They said that email us the website. Well, we emailed... Okay, here's the thing. They asked me to email them the link to the website. They said it would take 5 minutes for the email to arrive.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it makes no sense at all. So I did that, though. I emailed them the link to the actual PDF file so they could print that out. And then after a few minutes, I realized, you know, just to be safe, I'm also going to email them the PDF itself. I'm going to attach it and email it to them. And
so at that point, he had said, computer says no, we can't get that link up. It's 5 minutes before you get the next, and you said, well, I've already sent the next file, so it should be on its way. We waited a couple more minutes, and you had the second email with the PDF attached, and he again says, computer says no, we can't print it.
Computer says no. Yeah, the thing is, I mean, literally, they couldn't read the URL, they couldn't go to the website, and I just kept waiting around for that second email to show up, and they just kept shaking their head. No computer.
Did you ever get a look at the screen? You couldn't really see exactly what he was doing.
I couldn't duck my head around
that
much to see what was actually on the screen. I just know that he kept looking at it and shaking his head. And by this time, we were 40 minutes
away.
We're
looking at 40 minutes.
From departure.
And I offered the jump drive that I had prepared. I had put a ticket on it, a PDF ticket, and renamed it bus ticket and offered it. I said, well, can you plug this in? And he said, no, your computer says no, we can't do that.
I think manager said no to that because that is kind of a security
hole
to plug a, you know, any kind of a external device onto a machine. So I can sort of understand that. I can't understand why they couldn't print something from a damn website. That was insane. And just their attitude was just, nope, this is just the way it is. And there's nothing we can do. You have to do something else. So
at this point, we said no and left and jumped on a tram so that we could get to the actual train station. We figured, you know what? There's got to be somebody there that can print this. We're not going to sit here and arm wrestle you to use your computer the right way. We know you can print things. You have a printer. All right, we're out of here. So we take the tram. We then connect to a metro, and we get to Hauptbahnhof in Praha.
So, I don't think it's called Hauptbahnhof. It's called, I don't know what it's called, but the Prague main station.
Okay, Praha main.
Yeah.
Their main station where we immediately locate the bus.
No, it wasn't immediate. We had to run around a while to ask a bunch of people, where are the damn buses? This is a train station.
We went
to a platform, and there were trains there instead of buses, so we knew we were in the wrong place. We had to find the bus. And then once we found the bus, we figured, okay, maybe we can just cut this short, show the guy the PDF on the computer.
So here we have laptops open. We showed him on screen.
Yeah.
And bus driver says, no, we can't look. We can't let you on with just the screen.
You can't let you on your bus.
Are you kidding? Yeah, buddy, we'll let you on. Okay, no.
So I ask him, where do we print it out? And I don't have no idea. Nobody knows. Nobody knows the answer to the questions here. They just know how to say no, and they don't know what the solution is.
Thankfully, we knew where the bus was. And we had at least 15, 20 minutes, maybe 25 minutes to go.
I think we had 15. I think we only had 15 minutes.
It was getting tight.
It was getting really tight.
And we're sweating buckets already just finding the bus.
Yeah.
So
all we had to do now was find some way to print out the ticket for us.
And we first thing we did is run back in. I went to a money exchange. I went to a telephone, cell phone sales.
You went
booth.
To a cell phone store and started using their computers.
Well, I attached a jump drive. I asked the woman. She didn't quite understand. She said, yeah, use this laptop. It's network. Yeah, go ahead. I think she was allowing me to use the web, but I was attaching a jump drive trying to print on their printer in the store. Didn't work.
Unfortunately, the printer was hooked up to a fax machine. So
I don't think it was even installed. It was offering me fax, but at any rate, it did not work. And they actually found out that I had put this jump disc onto their machine and were quite unhappy and asked us to move along. Well, not before we asked, where can we go? Please?
We kept asking these people everywhere, and people kept saying, no, we can't do it. Go over here. And it was very Kafka-esque. It really was. There was no more appropriate place to be than Prague to have something like this happen, where you just have this bureaucracy telling you can't do something, and just go to the next person and have them tell you the same thing. And, of course, the clock is ticking the whole time. And we're just running around. There were all these massive queues, massive offices and lines.
We made our way to the main ticket booth, where a...
For trains, though.
Czech rail woman suggested... Go to the travel desk. Well, one side of the travel desk was sort of for like American travel outside of Europe, and he was
American travel outside of Europe.
It said travel in American, and it was like English.
English, right? Said in English, not American. I mean, it could be.
No, it was written in English.
Okay,
but you had the
not just for Americans.
No, it's for people traveling to exotic places such as America.
America's exotic to these people?
Who knows?
Wow.
I don't know. But it was not the right desk. And the guy was helping someone who was handicapped. She had a crutch, and she was taking her time, and he was accommodating.
You can't really cut in front of somebody with a crutch.
You can't do that. We were not going to bring our stressful time crunch onto this this woman. She's obviously trying to get things done. So we go to the opposite end, which is the comprehensive desk. In all Czech, the only thing that says in English is comprehensive and domestic travel, and we were not traveling domestically. I don't understand how this – ordinarily this wouldn't have made any sense, but I said, you know what? We're going to get this done. So I've run across the ticket room to this comprehensive desk, and there's a woman in there eating a candy bar. She's halfway through her candy bar, about my age, a young gal, and she drops the candy bar. Jumps from her desk as I hand her the jump drive and says, I cannot possibly put this into my... I cannot print from my computer. And she runs to the back of the office. She literally disappears with my jump disc and saying something about, I will talk to my supervisor, that kind of thing. At this point, you caught up with me, and I'm sort of reporting to you.
I brought all the bags and things over to the other side of this huge room.
But we had 10 minutes at this point. I mean, we're really,
It was more like 7 minutes.
Right.
More like 7. And I was
really.
I didn't even come inside the office. I was standing outside because I just didn't want to hear any other people say no. I was just going nuts. And I just was watching your progress and just...
You were hopeful, but I think you were...
Holding
erring.
Up enough fingers to tell you how much time we had. I think 5,
yeah,
4.
Yeah, exactly. It was,
and
it
then
was,
just a thumbs down. This
yeah,
is not going
to
work.
A thumbs down at that point. Yeah, it was getting close. I think you sort of gave up a little bit at that point. But I had this thumb drive that was not in my possession. I was like, well, look, I don't care how late we are. I'm not going to leave my hardware with someone. And she came back once to check on me, which gave me a little glimmer of hope. So we're out of time at this point. She comes back and says, my supervisor is printing this out, and disappears again. And I'm like, well, okay, she's printing it out. That's great. Okay, we'll wait maybe 3 more minutes, and she runs back in the room. at this point, I'm you know, you're convinced we're gonna miss this bus, and I'm like, okay, at least she's got my heart. She has the ticket printed out.
I was convinced we had missed the bus.
We had missed.
Yeah.
I had this absolutely astounded look on my face, and she's saying, I've had my supervisor call the bus driver, and I was blown away by this. And she hands me a laser printed copy of the ticket. She gives me my jump drive back. I have barely enough time to thank her profusely and walk out. I can't even process that she's done this amazing thing by contacting the bus driver. I had not expected that at all, and I was so gracious of her.
And we had to tear it through the station. I always hate doing this. It through the station, running at breakneck speed.
Our last sprint.
Yeah, well, your last sprint. I had heavy bags, so I couldn't really run that fast.
And negotiating locked doors.
All you had to do was get there and hold the bus. And I was trying as best as I could to get there.
And it wasn't me holding the bus. When I got there, the supervisor, some woman from Czech Rail, was standing with the bus driver.
Amazing.
And when I showed up and waved to her, she was pointing at me, saying, "He's the man. He's the man."
You were the man. You managed to stop the bus from leaving. I don't know how you pulled this off, but you did. And meanwhile, I'm finally catching up, climbing all these stairs, and trying to get out to where the bus is. And I can't get out the goddamn door. The door won't open. I'm there. Banging on the door. The bus is there. You're there.
I can't
figure out how to get outside. It was the most frustrating thing in my life.
It was three doors over.
The first two doors don't open. You have to keep going down until you get to the one that does open.
I'll admit,
it was a final stab in the back from Prague.
It was fun for me to watch.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Well, at that point, I knew we had the bus, and it was just sort of like you were really upset at that door. And
It was a great, momentous way, memorable way to leave Prague. Almost as memorable as our arriving and celebrating with all the people. Yeah, it. All that said, though, it's an amazing place. I totally recommend it. The bus took us to Nuremberg, and then to...
And that was a fun bus.
It was a fun bus ride. It was a short bus ride.
Never imagined we'd be on a bus during this trip, and
yeah,
it was quite enjoyable.
I hate buses usually.
It seemed to work quite well.
I wasn't pleased with the snack situation, because apparently they say they have snacks, and they really didn't have any snacks.
They had no snacks that they had advertised, and we knew we were in Germany when we got cell phone coverage.
Yes.
It seems like our European phones didn't seem to work quite as well as we were going through the highways in Czech. But as we got to the German border, everything started working, and we ended up in Nuremberg, final destination for the bus.
And then we took a train from there to the small town that we were staying in. And the next day, we were able to get a tour of the Club Mate facility. Unfortunately, we're starting to run low on time. Not because of the show so much, as because we have reservations at a restaurant we have to get to. But basically, Kyle, can you briefly tell us something about the Club Mate plant in this very small town in the middle of Bavaria in Germany?
Sure, very quickly. I'd be happy to expound on this further, but it was a very small town, village, actually. And this Loscher facility distributes beer to people within 50 kilometers of the plant itself. It's a very small facility. Manuel remarked that it was quite large from his sense of it, and I think the brunt of the size of it was because of the way they need to decant large volumes of beer before it's put into kegs and bottles. And for each stage of the beer-making process, it needs to be in very large vessels. And so those took up a certain part of the brewery and were very professionally installed. I mean, you got the sense this was a family business. This was practically their home. These large vessels were installed, and he ran us through everything.
Mm-hmm.
He showed us where it was cooled, where it was brewed for long periods of time. Everything was food-grade stainless steel, and there was even a section dedicated just to water purification. He told us that their water comes from two wells, local wells from this part of Bavaria, and it is filtered and purified to such a quality that it can be given to infants. And that's a big deal. A lot of bottled waters in Europe and elsewhere are labeled whether they can be used with infant formula or not. So basically, they use very, very high quality water. And as he was showing us the plant, he moved us into the Club Mate section, which is distinctly different from the way that they brew, which is large batches in large decanting containers. The mate is mixed very quickly. They mix in a they have a small section about the size of a Sub-Zero fridge or a couple of refrigerators, and it involves a pressurized stainless steel column for sugar and a pressurized stainless steel column for water, and they use piping and pressure gauges and pumps, of course, to take those two ingredients as well as an extract that is probably pumped in with a much smaller setup from disposable containers because it's made in another facility entirely. They don't actually deal with the mate itself. The extract comes in small containers, and they probably tube it into the mixing machine with these two large stainless steel columns that have the sugar and water. So the three ingredients take up about the size of a couple refrigerators, and they are precisely mixed and calibrated, and we were told that there's some secret involved in how that's done, and
yes,
some proprietary stuff, and the facility was not completely working at this point. It was sort of shut down for maintenance and just to show us, basically. It was an off day for the workers, which was something we noticed. They tend to take care of their workers who, during the summer, are just working intensely on getting beer and Club Mate out to the world. So
they give them all this extra time off in the winter, half day the day we went there, a holiday the day after that, and you just get the sense that everybody cares. There are about 30 employees altogether.
Yeah.
Like you said, family-run business, fifth generation at this company. Yeah. The father lives on site. Various other members of the family live right there, and Mr. Wilshire, who showed us around, lives only a couple of blocks away. It was incredible.
So the other end of the Club Mate process is the largest part of that part of the brewery, and it is all in one section. The mixer is in one part of this room. The other large part of the room is split in half between a very large bottler machine with a conveyor and a very large washer machine. So the mixing takes up very little space, and that's then piped over into the bottling machine. So what they do is they either take new bottles or recycled bottles that come in on deposit. They're in plastic crates, and these crates are loaded into the washer. The washer is completely automated, and you get the sense that everything is very clean. The entire brewery was tiled. Every room had drains so that they could do a full washdown of everything. Everything was very sanitary and incredibly well maintained. So the washing machine itself takes care of every single bottle with very hot water, I'm sure, and rinses them out, sends them back via these plastic crates on the conveyor into the bottler. The bottler pulls each bottle out of the crate, fills it with Club Mate at the precise mixing that has been calibrated on the smaller machine I mentioned, and then caps them, and it's labeled. They are put back into the plastic crates, and the plastic crates then move on a conveyor to another part of that section of the warehouse, where they're then palletized and ready for shipment. And they told us that they can produce as much as 80,000 bottles a day, which is incredible. And they're planning on expanding this section of the Club Mate plant. So
there you go. That was our look at the Club Mate plant, and it was quite an eye opener. I was very impressed with just the sincerity of it all, the advertising, the fact they don't do any advertising.
We were talking with them, and they don't do any advertising whatsoever. And you get the sense that they took this recipe, this Club Mate drink, they took that over from another smaller family-owned brewery. And the person that sold them that brewery wanted to hand it, to pass it on to another family that would create this craft drink in the very same way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really amazing, really special to hear. their sincerity and authenticity. And that is why Club Mate is such a special drink. You can drink other kinds of beer. You can drink other sorts of soda pop beverages. But this Club Mate is not made anywhere else with the same amount of love and special sort of unique manufacturing. They do this absolutely distinctly. They have an incredible amount of experience with it, and they love doing it.
Yeah.
And the people that drink it support them. The CCC guys come back year after year. He's like, yeah, you guys have seen mountains and mountains of bottles. You know, you saw that 2 years ago. You guys still want to come back and see. You guys have seen this.
It's a pilgrimage. It's like Mecca for hackers to go to this place and actually be amongst all these bottles of Club Mate. So, you know, I don't want to sound like a commercial or anything like that, but it is something unique and kind of precious, I think. And also just an eye-opener on how businesses are run in other parts of the world.
It doesn't take a huge amount of production capacity or space to make something that has a worldwide acclaim, you know,
mm-hmm.
and people that support it. And it's that word of mouth, that lack of advertising, that sort of family of, hey, we like what you're doing, we will support it. So it's really special. And I think a lot of the projects that are coming out of hacking and the technology community, open and free community, I think it's the same sentiment of supporting community and supporting people that are doing unique things and special things that need that following and sharing. You know, hey, you do this, well, we do this. You know, we're good with computers. We're good with, you know, other sorts of mechanical things. Everybody needs to be celebrated, and it was really fun to see what they do. So they do it no problem, and to us it was just mind-blowing to see where this drink, this magical drink, comes from.
In the middle of a small town, too. Amazing. Well, we have to be somewhere in 5 minutes, and it's a 10-minute walk, so we should be going. But Kyle, it's been amazing. It's been an amazing trip, just wandering around these parts of Europe with you, and here we are in Frankfurt, about to head back to the States.
Here we are, yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to have some more interesting adventures ahead.
I think so. I really enjoyed this. I think you and I, we've had a lot of fun together, and we work well, just taking all this stuff in. And I'm really thankful to the people and the communities here in Europe to host us, and to, you know, all the English-speaking people, all the people that don't speak English but they try. I just have really been overwhelmed with the amount of sincerity that we get from being overseas, but, you know, yet feeling like we're at home.
And maybe just as a final comment, if you could speak to people out there who might be listening to this show, thinking about embarking on some kind of adventure, or maybe even thinking that it's impossible for them to embark on some kind of adventure overseas or something like that. I know you were in a situation a few years ago where you were somebody listening to the show that
absolutely
didn't think maybe they would ever do something like this. What do you say to people that haven't quite taken that step yet?
Plan well. Set up your life so that you can leave for a little bit. Obviously, it's a logistical thing, but be ready to and travel light. Don't bring a whole bunch of baggage, and I mean mentally and physically. Be open. Be willing to travel with your eyes open and a sense of curiosity, and be just be open. Be flexible. Don't try to plan every single moment of your trip. There's no way we could have known we needed a bus at one point. There's no way we could have planned for every single train ride. You need to give yourself time as well. I gave myself several weeks to be over here, and I wanted to simply get away and really push myself as a traveler and soak up language and get a sense of the world other than what I get at home. It's great to have the web and all these global things, but it's a totally different thing to share that experience and to see it with your own eyes and become a part of the community and the culture and what people are doing in any situation. So I would just definitely encourage people to don't overthink it, and don't think that every minute of it you can anticipate. There's chance in everything. You have to let go and let go of thinking that it's going to be completely foreign or it won't work out or you won't be able to do things. You absolutely can. Just create the possibility in your life and in your mind, and you'll be amazed at the results and what's available and what you can do. So.
All right. Well, that's incredible, and I hope it continues to be incredible. It's been a blast, Kyle. Until next time.
Absolutely.
So we didn't have to wait very long till next time. It's now April, and we're overseas right now in the former Yugoslavian Republic. Right, Kyle?
Absolutely. God willing, we've made it there in relation to all this emergency with volcanic ash and uncertainty about getting over it all. We finally made it.
Well, yeah, you know, actually, we're still standing here in New York, but here's what happened. Since we actually did an update that aired a couple of weeks ago when we were driving into the city in the rain, that was only a few days ago for us, but for you, it seemed like 2 weeks. Weird how physics works. But what happened since then, we were talking about the volcanic ash that was erupting, and since then, our plans kind of got scuttled. We had originally planned on flying into Germany and then taking a train down from Germany through Austria to Slovenia and then starting the whole former Yugoslavian tour. Well, all those planes were canceled because for some reason we had to fly through London. I guess that's how I got a cheap fare. But all the London flights were canceled. They still are, in fact. But what I was able to do, and tremendous credit must go to my friend Reed, who stayed up all night helping me find alternative travel plans for a little bit extra. He was able to figure out a way to get us to fly directly into Yugoslavia 1 day later. So we'll be flying into Zagreb in Croatia and then flying out of Belgrade in Serbia. And that's great for us for a couple of reasons. It gets us there, unlike everybody else who can't seem to get to Europe right now. We're going to a less popular destination and a more southerly destination. But the really good thing about this is that we get more time to spend in the former Yugoslavia, and that was a problem in our initial itinerary. We had to travel too much to get from other countries, get from Germany, Austria, and then afterwards getting over the Adriatic Sea to Italy. And wanting to see all the places, it just seemed like too much of a breakneck pace that we had to keep. So it's actually worked out to our advantage where we can spend a bit more time in the places that we wanted to go to, namely the former Yugoslav republics. Of course, that is assuming that we do take off, and we're supposed to take off tomorrow, which is the 20th of April. You're hearing this on the 4th of May. At least you should be. Or you might be listening to it later, but I think we made that okay. If this actually works,
yeah, I think this goes right along with us being able to roll with a little bit of the uncertainty and come up with a backup plan or an alternative. And I'm thankful that you put in the effort and we're able to find some people that could help us come up with another plan. But it's looking like it's going to happen. We're watching the news very, very closely now, and as you're hearing this, hopefully we're touring around and getting a good jump on our trip with these extra hours and days and the reduction in travel as far as getting from Germany down to the former Yugoslavian Republic. So I think this is, again, goes right along with our history and our good luck when we get these kinds of challenges thrown our way. So here we go.
Challenge, wow, it doesn't begin to say it. I mean, have you ever seen any? No one's ever seen anything like this. This has never happened before. I don't know how much attention it's getting 2 weeks into the future, but right now, in mid to late April, it's having a catastrophic effect on the airline industry and on the various bits of the economy over in Europe, and of course, screwing up people's plans big time. People are stranded in various places, And, you know, sleeping in airports. I've never had to sleep in an airport, but I see everybody in Europe is doing that. This story isn't even making it to the news here nearly as much as it is over there, obviously because it doesn't affect our airspace, but it does affect everybody going over the Atlantic Ocean. So I'm kind of surprised that it's not front and center like it is for everybody else over there, because it does have an incredible effect. And again, you know, if that were to happen here, I don't think we'd do very well, because we don't have the high-speed rail system that they have in Europe, which is packed, of course. It's sold out everywhere. And again, that's going to serve us, because we're going somewhat to the south of that on a less high-speed branch of the train system. So I don't think it'll be as crowded or as hectic. Just a lot of border crossings to worry about. But you know, this is monumental, this kind of a thing, this kind of a natural event. We think it's natural. I'm sure there's conspiracy people out there. You know, when the earthquakes happened, people were saying that it was the United States government behind the earthquakes. So maybe the United States government is behind the volcano. I can't imagine what the United States government is up to. They keep doing these horrible things. But the truth will come out, right?
The truth must. And I've often wondered, you know, we do all this drilling and engineering, geoengineering and mining and stuff, and who knows how well we can actually calculate these kinds of events and don't know it. But I don't want to get into conspiracy theories. I'm sure there's plenty of other shows for that.
But the problem I have with conspiracy theories, it gives too much credit to human beings. Okay?
Right.
We're such a tiny little speck on this earth, in this universe, to think that we have the power to do it all. You know what? Nature can wipe us out in a second if it has the mind to. And this volcano is just one example of that. Just one little volcano. It's not even that big a volcano. In fact, there's a second one nearer that if that were to go off in the same way, it would be a lot worse. And we could talk about volcanic ash over the skies for years. So, yeah, you know, things can happen that just completely put all of our petty interests to shame. And, you know, I consider that to be somewhat humbling, right?
Well, there are coincidences. Remember that. And it has been amazing to watch the coverage. And as you said, who knows what it's going to be like a couple weeks from now. But two of the stories that I thought were really interesting was word from the pilots union. There was a pilots union representing about 38,000 pilots. I think it's the European Cockpit Association.
The European Cockpit Association.
Yeah, and they're actually at odds with some of the airports and the business side of the airlines, saying that we ought not to put economics in front of safety. And so I think that's very interesting in light of the
pilots are at loggerheads with the industry that wants to fly.
Yes.
Well, of course, they're the ones that are going to go into the volcanic ash
first. Absolutely. Yeah. But you're getting a lot of pushback from the airline industry against the EU. And I've heard critical stuff. I read another thing online. Somebody commented saying, you know, the EU regulates the size of peas, but they don't regulate their own airspace. Each country regulates their own airspace separately, and so there's some criticism from the airline industry from that perspective. So it's very, very interesting to watch, you know, the economics, you know, we must feel terrible for the hundreds of millions of dollars these large airlines are running, or losing, I'm sorry. And, you know, to that end, you got to think, you know, maybe hurrying and rushing isn't quite worth it. And so it's very interesting to watch the, this 5 days that we were shut down, and then all of a sudden everybody's tapping their fingers and looking at their bottom line, and now safety is less of a concern, even though I think we just saw a recent update that this volcano has erupted again. And this is, you know, the eve of when we're supposed to leave on our second flight.
And that a military plane actually did get damaged by going up into the sky.
Yes, the F-16s were going through there patrolling the airspace, and they reported silicate deposits inside the engines. Whereas you have KLM and Lufthansa, some of the German and the British Airways, larger airlines are going out and doing test flights saying it's no problem. So it's really interesting to watch some of the politics and economics at play here. And
it's interesting because it's the industry that seems to be upset at the government, not the people. I don't see people rallying and saying we have to go places. They're quite content to stay on the ground if it's ruled dangerous by the powers that be, and I think they kind of trust in that decision.
Yeah, they're definitely inconvenienced. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the pictures of people with cots, or you know, talking about outrageous hotel prices. you know, and they're forced to just sort of deal with it and wait. And, you know.
I think we need to cut each other some slack, and the airlines have to do this as well. I mean, something has to be figured out so that they don't go out of business, I guess. But they also have to be a little bit compassionate to the customers. When I was trying to reschedule, they wouldn't let me reschedule to a different part of the year. They said, well, we can only schedule the amount of money you paid, and if you want to route your flight differently so that you don't get canceled tomorrow, you're going to have to pay the difference in fare. And, like, you know, how does that help anybody that we have to pay penalties to make changes which are unavoidable in the first place? So I went for the full refund. They lost the customer as a result. It just seems like they could have done it a little bit more sympathetically. In a similar way, you're going back to Seattle at some point. Now imagine if you had to go back to Seattle at a different time because the volcano affected your other plans. Well, you'd still have to pay a penalty for making that change to fly back to Seattle on a different date. The airlines can get away with saying it's an act of God, we have no control over it, therefore we're not responsible for covering anyone's expenses. Fine, maybe that's fair, but doesn't the same apply to people as well? When an act of God affects their plans, shouldn't they be able to say to the airline, I couldn't avoid this, I shouldn't have to pay a penalty, I shouldn't have to pay you something for this?
And they're already losing money. Let's face that. Yeah, we understand. You know, why do you have to gouge people that are paying you in the first place? You know, these are your customers, and where is that customer service, you know, philosophy? And, you know, I guess the customer's not right or something. It's kind of sad.
And more can be done in the airports, too, to make the airports comfortable for people who don't have any other place to go. I think every airport in a situation like this should be turned into a hotel that doesn't cost any money to stay in, that people get every service they need, because that's what humanity should be all about, is just taking care of people.
Right. They're very linear. They have one way of the running their business, and their inflexibility is just so telling in times like these, and there's a lot of improvement, I think, that could be made. And I really hope that going forward, and by the time this airs, that people have actually voiced, you know, kind of a little bit of, you know, outrage and some critical perspective on the situation, and maybe made some change.
I actually saw one report where they were saying that people were risking prosecution by staying past their visa expiration date, like as if they had a choice, as if they could just leave.
It's absolutely outrageous.
Some people have this ideology of just the rules are the rules and they cannot be broken for anything. Well, you know, this volcano, I think, is one thing to break the rules for. Anyway, we're just about out of time for tonight, you know, we're going to get through this thing somehow, and hopefully we'll be back in the studio next week, live, and talking about what it is exactly that we did. And, of course, in future weeks, we'll have all kinds of audio and surprises and things like that. But, yeah, for now, volcano, man. It's something to really appreciate and to realize that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to just see how mankind deals with chaos.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, let's go to the former Yugoslavia. Good night.
Good night.
My name is Oscar. I want to introduce myself. I was killed in 1936 by my brother. I'm a demon. I want you to know that the world is going to end in 2007. You'll only have a heart. It's a very large active volcano on the ground. The world is going to go into a global winter. It's going to be Delta.
Trolls on that tape, getting stepped on. Argentina.